So we're on page 44 of the source sheet on Chazar de Poel. We've been discussing Devar HaAvod. Now, what I want to discuss today is the three different mechayvim for holding somebody liable under Devar HaAvod. So anybody want to tell us what the three mechayvim are? I'll just call on someone here to clarify.
Nezek, Arev.
Yeah, so you have Nezek, Arev, and the idea of Kinyan. The idea of Schiras Polem. So we'll call it just the tort theory, the contract theory, and the idea of Arev, which we'll see is sui generis. It's some mixture of like a promissory estoppel and a hischaivos midas, which we'll get into. But so these are the three machaivim. Let me just set them up in a careful way and point out some of the interesting nafkamina between them. So we saw the position of the Rashba in Bava Metziah and Bava Mabes. The Rashba held that the only time there's ground for liability in Devar HaAved is when by hiring these workers, you forewent the opportunity of hiring other workers. And so it's considered, it seems like it's a kind of a nezek that these workers harmed you by preventing or by blocking you from hiring other workers who would have gotten the job done. And I think the phrase in the Rashba, my hifsiduhu, what loss did these workers cause if they didn't deprive you of hiring somebody else, and there's no grounds for nezek? All right,
let me off.
All right. Does everybody hear me? Everybody fine?
I hear you. We're good.
Okay, good. Now, we saw the Hagos Ashri disagreed. The Hagos Ashri spoke about there could be chi of mitam, dina de garmi, etc. That's clearly a Nezek-based principle. So the Hagos HaShri is definitely open to the idea that in Devar HaAved there could be liability mitam garmi. But he thinks that, why do we need a separate principle of Devar HaAved if we always could apply the rules of garmi? He points out that the rules of Devar HaAved are not always consistent with garmi. So you recall, the Hagos HaShri gave the argument, he said, why does the Gemara seem to sometimes predicate the liability of the Poalim who breached in Devar HaAved on their having deposited their work materials at the employer's property? If it's Garmi, they should be Chayiv in any event. Does that sound familiar in the question of Hagos HaShri?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the Hagos HaShri answers that there's a subset of cases where the liability mitam nezek is not going to apply. That's the case basically pointed out by the Rashba, where you didn't lose anything by relying on this guy's promise. For example, you had the flax sitting there, it was about to spoil, no one else is available, I ask you to come and help me, you say yes, you'll come and help me, but then you breach. So your breach didn't cause any loss to me. So I wasn't out of pocket any nezek because of your promise to come and work for me. Afal pichein, he says, there's going to be liability mitam schiras poalim. There's going to be a contractual basis for liability, even though there's no tort basis for liability. And here's his formulation in Nagos Ashri in Parak Vav Simen Beis, top of page 45. He says, Kivin sheniskiru lo, once you hired them, kvar tzrichin lasos. They already have a duty to do it. And so the idea here is that even though counterfactually they didn't cause you any loss, still the fact that they contractually agreed to do it, that sets up the normative obligation for them to perform. And if they don't perform, they're liable for the costs. Okay, so I think that Hagos HaShri is really, both conceptually and in his formulation, is a very nice articulation of this idea of liability arising under contract. Kivan sheniskru lo kvar tzrichin lasoso. And I want to point out that this fits in very nicely in jurisprudence. There's an important distinction between reliance-based damages, which is usually the principle of nezek, right? So if I cause you damages by relying on me in some way, that's going to be a nezek kind of principle. That's what the Rashba is getting at. You had to have lost by relying on me. But in contract, we don't care about reliance. We care about expectation. What was the normative expectation set up by the agreement? And the agreement here was that this worker would perform for you. that entitles you to have him complete the job. So you're basically collecting in Davar HaAvod for the expectation loss, not for the loss of relying on this guy's promise. So I think this is a very nice distinction.
Gitamar, doesn't the Rajva, isn't compensation for the Rajva also an index to completion, to performance? Now, if everybody agrees that it's not just if you, not just like expenses that you've got to cover, right? The reliance is usually like, you know, somebody shelled out money and because you said you would do something and you have to compensate them for their losses. I think everybody agrees you have to make, even though the trigger for the Rajva might be like that he relied on you.
Right.
The damages are expectation damages, not reliance damages.
No, I think the Rajva might think that even when you calculate damages, you'd calculate it relative to how much you lost by foregoing the opportunity to get somebody else. It wouldn't be, even the measure of damages would be indexed to the reliance.
When I read the Rajva, I thought it was common ground more or less to everybody that like the Rajva has like a standard, you know, modal theory of the cases when this would apply. And I don't think his view is that compensation has to do with, you could shell out, reliance damages are only, where do you see what you said, Ron?
That the measure of damage would be indexed to the reliance?
Yeah.
So you don't see...
typically reliance... Say again?
There's nothing in this Rashba's formulation that suggests that. There's nothing in this formulation that suggests to the contrary either. But I think the fact that he's looking to the counterfactuals to see how much you lost... by relying on this guy to determine whether there are damages at all, would commit him to the view that the measure of damages should also be indexed to the same criterion.
Okay, I don't think that is such a commitment. I also think that Gemara is pretty, it's difficult to the thing you have to do is pay if like Davar HaAvod damages get triggered is pay for workers to in the standard case is pay for workers. Do the thing that you said you would do.
Right.
I think all the Rajva's saying is that if there was no, like, you know, basically, if you were the only game in town as a worker, then he's no worse off. There would have been a Davar HaAvod anyway. All you did was, you know, all you did was promise you were going to do something, and then you went back on your promise. But there was no other way for
the guy to get. Let's put it this way, Cole. There's not enough information in the Rishonim here to adjudicate that question yet. All right. So I'll bring in some formulations from the case of Chazar de Baal HaBayis where Rishonim are explicit on that idea that if it's reliance based, then the measure of damage would also be indexed to it. But there's nothing. You're right that there's nothing here to decide that question yet for us. Okay. So one
index to it.
What? That the measure of damage will just be how much you lost.
Index is an up down way of saying proportionate to.
Okay, square.
Okay. So that's one nafkamina of whether we're going under tort or contract, whether or not you require that you've lost the opportunity to hire somebody else at this worker's promise, and that's the machlokas and that goes Ashri and the Rashba. Let's look at a second nafkamina. So the second nafkamina, I think, is the case where you're working for somebody.
Wait, before we move on.
Sure. Who was that?
Wait, before we move on.
Yeah.
Yoni.
I see. Yeah, hey, Yoni.
Hello.
I hear you.
Before we move on, it might be worth noting that the Gulf of Truth. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I could hear you. You're a little spotty.
Alright, well, my internet connection is not great, but the Haggadah of such Sharif language seems to suggest that it's
not necessarily dependent on whether you started working it. Manifests like later, so you know, we'll get to. But sound like once you agree to start working for him, so at that point you're dependent, and any unavoidable costs are now going to be appraised again.
He thinks that, you mean you don't think it's a kind of a Kenyan? I think his point is kivan sheniskeru lo kvar. Right, once he's already acquired or hired, he has to do it.
Yeah, there's no kinyan.
Why do you think that there's no kinyan?
Where is the mention of kinyan? There's no atop malacha. There's no kinyan. There's no nothing. It's just like once you started, then you're chayav.
No, I don't think he means that there's no kinyan. You're right. In the beginning, when he talks about mishum dina degarmi, he mentions that there's no kinyan. But that's if the chayiv is mitam garmi. I think once he gets into this idea of kivan sheniskeru lo kvar tzrichin lasos, I think that implies that there has to be some sort of formal kinyan to trigger the niskeru lo kvar. That's my reading. I don't see how you could get to liability mitam contract or a kinyan without there being some sort of formal Hakna of the Schiros. Like you saw in this very exciting book that I just was given yesterday as a present from someone on justice and transactions, the theory of contract law. The idea of the contract is that it's a kind of a property transfer. And you can only have property transfer if there's some sort of kinyan to execute it. I can't tell if Yoni's accepting my answer or his internet is spotty, so we'll give him a chance to respond later. All right.
No, I mean, he doesn't respond. He doesn't say anything to us. Right. I don't mean, like, you're adding words.
Yes, but I don't think you could get a basis. I don't think you could get a basis of Kenyan Schiras Poalim without there being some sort of Kenyan. Yoni, you disagree with that conceptually?
I don't know. I need to think about it, whether I think it's possible. Okay. But I think it's certainly laden within Yagosa Shri.
All right. So let me know what you come up with. I think you're right. In the beginning, he mentions that there's some sort of kinyan, but I think that's going... He mentions it's afilu bedvarim below kinyan. I think that's before we get to the kinyan theory. We'll see, actually, Yoni. We'll talk more about whether this applies kodem haschala samalacha, kodem kinyan, in a few minutes. Now, the second nafkamina that I want to mention...
All right.
Is what happens if you're working for free. So we saw that, so you're working for free for the fellow, but you're working for free in a Dabar HaAved case. So remember we saw the Ramah in Simon Shin Lamed Gimel Hey, he quoted the Ma'arik, who said that if you're a Poel Oseh B'chinam, Yochel Lachzor Afilu B'Dabar HaAved. That if you're working for free, you could back out even B'Dabar HaAved, and there's no liability. So this came from the Tshuva of the Ma'arik, and... we saw, what was the basis for the Ma'arik's position? Anybody remember? What was the basis for the Ma'arik's position?
Sure.
What's that?
You need Sira. You're working for free, then you're not doing the guy no wrong.
Yeah, well, I think formally, he's saying that formally, you, in order for you to be liable b'davar ha'aved, there has to be some kinyan, there has to be some contract, there has to be some schirus. And without schirus, you can't be liable in davar ha'aved. So his formulation was a little opaque, but he said, you can't apply the rules of davar ha'aved to this case of the fellow who backed out when he was working for free. He says, because the reason for liability in davar ha'aved is Mishum diniskeru lo las os melachto, v'chi hadri b'hu avdi shalo kedin. When you're hired to do the job, then there's a penalty for backing out and liability that flows from that. However, he says, in our case, he says lo niskeru lo las os melachto, and he says ki hadar be efshar dilav shalo kedin avad. So the question is. He's this double formulation. A benidon hazeh lo hayar Reuven notel shum schar mishimon velo niskar lo lasos melachto. I think what the Marik is getting at is that this guy was not hired via a contract. Now, there's a weird assumption in the Marik that he's thinking that the moment you're not being paid for your job, that means there's no contract. You could have disagreed and said that even if you're working for free, sometimes you're signing a contract and you create certain liabilities by signing. For example, in this case, the guy, his expenses are being paid by the employer. But let's grant the Ma'arik the empirical assumption that if you're working for free, there's no contract and no schiras po'alim. So he's saying it follows from there that there can't be liability in Davar Ha'aved. So I think that's a great raya that he thinks the basis of liability in Davar Ha'aved is schiras, kinyan, and not tort, not nezek. That diak is made very nicely by the Pischei Choshen, who quotes the Ma'arik and says, Mashma midvarav shedin socher alav omate b'davar ha'avod lo nemar ela b'schiros ve'eno midin mazek. Were the underlying theory of davar ha'avod to be mitam nezek, it should apply even in this case where you're working for free. So I think that's a very nice nafkamina. Now, let me just make two observations about this Ma'arik.
Is it important why they have to work for free? Why is that true? That might have been it, but also me, Garmi, that the guy, wasn't anybody else. And if I volunteer to do something on the street, I'm not high for Garmi if I cause damage, if no one else would have done it in the place.
You might be. If I say, so take this case, Yoni, I say, I need somebody, I'm hiring workers today to help me move all my books from New York to Philly. And you come along and you say, hey, don't hire people, I'll help you out. And then I rely on you, and then you cancel, 5 minutes before you're supposed to show up, and it's too late for me to hire workers. Under a theory of Nezek, it's very mistaver that you should be liable, right? You caused me to lose the transportation of the books today. Right, Yoni?
I think Yoni has...
I guess
it's
a
alternative.
Right, that's the Rashba's point. That's the point of the Rashba. In order to be Chayav Mitam Nezek, there always has to be alternatives. Right? But the Nezek inheres in your inducing me to forego. Say that again?
We're assuming there were alternatives. And if there were alternatives, I'd argue maybe there's not the same alternative as someone working for free as someone working for pay. That's not really defined as an alternative.
Well, I mean...
That's a good point.
Say it again.
That's actually a very good point, that the alternative, the alternative theory of the Rajba, it's true, Yoni's correct, that the alternative theory of the Rajba is... I take it back. It's not clear why that should affect anything. Like, it should actually be... What the idea? Yoni, you're saying the fact that you were going to work for him for free, but there was an alternative that he could have paid somebody, could work in his favor to cancel out the PU of Tashlumen. I don't really see that. Interesting thought.
Yeah, right. I don't see why. I mean, the point is, there might be a deduction. I think you'd get a credit for how much he would have paid, how much he would have expended on the other workers. And then Yoni, in this case, would only have to pay my net losses, right? But I think the point is still, if you cause me a loss by my not being able to move my stuff, then you would be liable.
I think that the point Yoni's making is kind of like, Yoni, if I understand you correctly, like, you're just struggling, which I think is, like, the right reaction. Like, this is not... Nezikin is when, like, I break your windshield with my baseball bat.
Right.
This does not look like that.
That's right. That's what these Rishonim are. Is it Garmi exactly? What species of Garmi?
Yeah, exactly. That's the best objection to the to the Raj. This is like first of all, there was no Maitha. There was an omission. The most you could say is that this is kind of like when some Rishonim go in this direction, is that this is kind of like a Shomer Phenom.
Right, something like that.
It's not classic. It's not clear why, like, not showing up, and then, there's some... It's not like, you're not showing up, call it the bomb to explode. It's that the guy lost money,
Well, it depends what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
Right. Guys, by the way, isn't it great to be able to hear Cole loud and clear? Everybody gets to hear him from their own console.
It's beautiful.
Is that like a passive-aggressive comment about...
No, I'm serious, because sometimes it's hard for us to hear you through the through just my computer, but now everybody has... Everyone has direct access to you.
No magnification.
Yeah. Okay, so the second nafkamina... Oh, sorry, I just wanted to make one ara in the Marik. Is that he's assuming that if somebody's hired for free, then there can't be a schiros basis, right? It's not schiros poelim unless you're getting paid for your work. Just want to point out that on the middle of page 47, we have the Hagos Ashri in the seventh parak of Bava Kama, Siman Yud Aleph. The Hagos Ashri there says, V'adam hamashil es atzma ledavar ha'aved. So a person lends himself out for a davar aved. Misha amar hareni shol l'cha l'kach v'kach zman sulo matzi hadarbe. Right, so he's not allowed to back out once he says Hareini Shal L'chal Kach V'Kach Zman. So I just want to, that seems to assume, contrary to the Marik, that there is such a species as a contract without a contract of Schiras Polim without being paid. Right, so there is a coherent category of Adam Shenishal, not Sheniskar. Right, so if he's lending himself out, he's not being paid, and he explicitly says if it's a Davar Ha'aved, then you're no longer allowed to back out. So that's contrary to the Marik's assumption that a person who lends himself out will always be allowed to withdraw. Okay. So that's just one
side. What's
that? Did I hear Yakir try to get a point in here?
I think that might go with history. I don't know who's talking. So.
Oh, it goes
up. Yeah, you don't need first. I was saying, do you think that I go with history to based on
the
contract and not based on the
Arev? Right. I think I don't see any reason to assume that he's working Mitam Arev there. It could be that implicitly maybe that's what he's getting at. Yes, we don't know the underlying principle. If he's working Mitam Arev, then he could be consistent with the Marik. And by the way, we'll get to in a minute, I think the Marik himself entertains the possibility of chiyuv mitam arev in the case of working for free. He just rejects it for side reasons, which we'll get to in a moment. So yes, Yoni, I think you're right. If you read the Hagos Ashri as working mitam arev, then he could be consistent with the Marik. Except that the Marik seems to assume that once you're working mitam arev, then the employer was not justified in relying on you if you're volunteering for free. Do you remember that, Yoni? I'll make the point more explicitly in a few minutes when we start talking about Chiyuv Mitam Arev.
Yeah.
Right? So it might be another empirical disagreement whether you think that Chiyuv Mitam Arev could exist when someone's working for free. Is it reasonable for you to rely on somebody who's not asking to be compensated? Yeah, a good, very good, very good point, Yoni. Yakir, you have a comment?
Yes. Yeah, is it important to that Marik is specifically talking about self-aligned and matam, that aspect of the liability?
As opposed to like Tashlumin?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. And it seems like we've shown him, the Gemara itself only speaks about Sochar Lein Umatan. The Gemara itself doesn't mention Tashlumin a lot or Kfiya. Other Rishonim try to deduce Kfiya and Tashlumin from Socher Lein Umatan. So I don't know if we could read too much into the Marik sticking to the language of the Gemara. But what do you think, Yakir?
I don't know about the Marik specifically. I think it might be a reasonable position to say that Socher Lein Umatan is unique to the contract. Whereas if there's also some liability for Nezek, that would only manifest itself in Tashlumin and not in Sokalina.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's a nice suggestion. I don't see any language in the Marik to pull us one way or the other yet, but we should definitely bear that in mind when we start thinking about the distinctions between the different remedies, which we'll get to in the next Chabura. Good. So let me get to this. The next nafkamina, I think. So we have one nafkamina between Nezek and contract is the counterfactual opportunities. The second is somebody who's working for free. The third nafkamin, I think, and this gets to Yoni's first point, is whether you require haschalas hamalacha. We saw this when we spoke about the breach of the balabayis, and it seems obvious to me that the only way you could talk about liability mitam contract or kinyan is if there's some sort of kinyan of haschalas hamalacha or otherwise. Well, it could be haschalas hamalacha, it could be tashlum haschiras, it could be a formal kinyan, but absent all of those things, I don't see how you could generate liability mitam schiros if there's no kinyan. So anybody who thinks that there's real liability quote maschalas hamalacha, I think they'd have to be working within the paradigm of nezek. So this is, or maybe arev, which we'll talk about soon. So this is a machlokas poskim. You can see the Shulchan Aruch in Simin Shin Lam Gimel when he talks about davar ha'aved is not really so clear, because it's not clear what the phrase of bama dvar mamurim, you see bottom of page 47, is really qualifying. Whether that's supposed to be a case of achar haschalas hamalacha or kodem haschalas hamalacha. The Shach in Simen Shin Lamed Gimel writes, following a group of Rishonim, he says, Socha leinu matan, which is a davar ha'aved remedy, afilu emadayin lo hischilu bimalacha, kivan shehu davar ha'avud, socha leinu matan. So the Shach thinks that davar ha'aved would apply kodem haschalas hamalacha. I think that has to commit him to some quasi-nezek theory, or maybe arev also, but I don't think it could be a schiros theory. The Ramban might have this view also. If you look at the Ramban on the middle of page 48, daf ayin vav mebeis. By the way, is my screen shared with you guys? Do you see my screen?
I cannot.
But meaning you don't see that I'm scrolling through the Google Doc?
I can see, I'm on the Google Doc.
Okay, separately. Okay, it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you look at the Ramban on Ayin Vav Mebeis, the Ramban says, and here's formulation is pretty clear, Rav Yodea, Shapolim Shechazru Behem B'davar Ha'aved, Af Al Pi Shelo Hischilu B'Melacha, Socher Le'enu Matan. So the Ramban clearly thinks that there is going to be liability for Davar Ha'aved, at least to take Yakir Za'ara with respect to Socher Le'enu Matan, prior to Haschalas HaMalacha, prior to Kenyan. V'yaf al-pisha kol zman shelo bas ha-chavila liyado ein kan el advarim. And he's saying, yeah, and even before they put any tools in your house, right, so it's only a verbal relationship, it sounds like there's no real Kenyan. Nevertheless, chayavin l'shalim ad kidei scharin v'lo yoser. You have to pay, they are liable, they're on the hook, at least up to the amount they're going to be paid. Maybe double, it depends how you read that Gemara. Why? Desamcha datayhu meikara, because they had this das initially to be held liable. The ein kan derech lekinyan. I think that means that there's no requirements of a kinyan. Meaning the smichas das liability doesn't depend on there having been some sort of antecedent kinyan. So I think the Ramban here is definitely saying there's liability for davar ha'avod kodem haschalas hamalacha. I think that rules out a schiras-based interpretation of liability. In the Ramban's language, I think he's working within the idea of arev. That's why he's basing liability in samcha datayu meikara. What do you guys think of the Ramban's language?
Wait, what's the last phrase, like right afterwards? Samcha datayu
meikara. What's the last phrase right afterwards? Samcha datayu meikara.
Yeah. I think what that means is that when they were asked to come, they had das that they were willing to cover the liability arising from their breach, like if they were to, in the event that they would breach. The ein kan derech lekinyan, this doesn't really require a kinyan, right? It doesn't depend on there being a kinyan.
Are we saying that's arev?
Yes. That's what I think.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I wasn't sure if people know that there are, but yeah, there are makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think that idea of smichas das meikara, it's like a voluntary hischaivus ex ante in case they end up breaching, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And he's saying that's not kinyan dependent. That's how I read the Ramban. I just want to point out that the Pisrei Chushan, I think, seems to read it differently. Look what he says here. On the bottom of 48, he's really working off the Maharic, right? So remember the Maharic said, you see what I'm highlighting. He cites the Maharic. He says, "Socha le'enamatim davar aver lo'nemar le'schiros ve'enam midin mazik." Ma'ashakasa midina miknasa. The Maharic said, "Oh, it's either miyikra din or miknasa that you have to pay." Nira kavanasa shemidine schiros nishtabed lasos melachto. The reason why there's liability in davar aved for the Maharic, as we said, is because it arises midine schiros that you have a duty to complete the job, and part of your duty to complete the job is to ensure that it gets done in a case of breach, right? But then, that's all the Maharic, and that works out nicely. But then he says, "Uche'en mashakasav haramban v'chidushav, desamcha daite t'mura scharo lehishtabed b'shir k'dei scharan. V'kivan shezeh nishtabed lo, v'zeh hifsid mamono chayev b'shir zeh." It sounds to me like he's reading the Ramban as working within some contract theory. Samcha daite t'mura scharo lehishtabed b'shir k'dei scharan. I think that's not the right way to go. I think the right way to go in the Ramban is to say that it's mitam arev, whereas the Pesachei Choshen here seems to be reading the Ramban as working within the paradigm of contract schiros. And I think that doesn't make sense because the Ramban explicitly says that there's liability kodem aschal samalacha, which in my view that's not consistent with saying that the mechayev is mitam contract. Okay.
Doesn't American law not require Kenyan?
That it does require?
I thought once you have any contract that has an agreement between two parties, what's the word for it?
Promissory estoppel?
No.
Consideration?
No.
Whoever's speaking right now, all you need is to have. Yeah, I think everybody mute your audio for a second while Yoni's speaking.
No, it's probably Yoni's system.
Yeah, it's not good. I have a very bad setup.
Right, Yoni, if you just mute one of yours, mute your computer and then only speak into your phone or vice versa. Oh, you're a genius. Is it better now? Much better. Yes. Oh wow, okay, that was good. I turned off my computer. All right, one for Yale. Yeah, it was great, Akir. In American law, isn't all you need is consideration? That's what I'm looking for.
Well, that's what makes a contract valid. Right?
Yeah, so doesn't it start right away once you have consideration? You don't actually have to start working or do a Kenyan or anything.
Well, no, that is the Kenyan.
The Ramban is that there's
that
no,
is the Kenyan.
This is just like they made an agreement and they shook on it like gentlemen.
Right. So the halacha requires a Kenyan for there to be any contract. You're right, in American law, you don't require, in American law, consideration suffices for there being this kind of a kinyan. But given that the halacha doesn't recognize that consideration alone is a kinyan, right? So the Ramban can't be working within a kinyan theory, kodem, any formal kinyan.
Well, maybe he does. Maybe the Ramban thinks that if it's generally required kinyan, it requires halach malacha, but in the context of davar ha'aved,
right,
you don't need
that'd be a tremendous chiddush, like a promissory estoppel idea that sometimes we'll treat it as if there's a kinyan even when there's no kinyan because of the irreparable loss that this would cause. That's what you're suggesting, Yoni.
I don't understand Yoni.
Yeah, let me flesh out Yoni's suggestion for him, and then Yoni, tell me if I get it right. Some people view the idea of promissory estoppel in American law as the idea that usually you require a contract to be held liable for breach, right? But in a promissory estoppel case where I promise to do something for you, even if there's no consideration and there's no contract, the fact that my promise induced your reliance to your detriment allows the law to view it as if there's consideration and as if there's a contract. So I think Yoni's suggesting maybe the idea for the Ramban is that Davar HaAvod works in lieu of any kinyan to create a binding agreement. I think that's what Yoni's suggesting. And then we should read the Ramban as saying, Kodem Aschalas HaMalacha, there could be liability because of Davar HaAvod making it into a kind of a kinyan. Is that right, Yoni?
Yeah.
You can't read the Ramban that way because he says the in kan derech lekinyan.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Noah. I don't think there's anything in the Ramban that would suggest Yoni's reading, and then Noah's pointing out that it actually sounds a little contrary, right? Saying that we don't require, you know, this is not a kinyan basis for liability. It's kind of some separate route. It's smichas das.
That's even worse than that. Apa pisha kol zman shelo bata kabel liyado in kan ela devarim.
Yeah, that's right.
There's no kinyan.
That's right. That's why I wouldn't read it that way, Yoni, for both Noah's point and Cole's point. Yeah, I think so. Good. Let me just point out that the Meiri also runs with this idea that there could be liability for Davar HaAvod Kodem Aschalas HaMalacha. This is the Meiri on page 49 on Daf Ayin Vav Mebeis. He says, Chazra Apolim Afilu Kodem Shaholchu Imu Davar HaAvod Eitz HaBal HaBayit Sorach Alei Numatan. He says, and I'm assuming that there's no kinyan either here. So I think this suggests that he's working within some either nezek basis of liability or ari basis of liability, but not mitam schiros, not mitam kinyan. Now there are achronim who disagree with this idea. The Ktsos in Simon Shin Lamed Gimel Gimel explicitly disagrees. He thinks that the only time you could have liability for Davar HaAvod is after there's a kinyan. So if you look here on page 49 in this Ktsos and Shin Lamed Gimel Gimel, you could just see the underlying section. Umiyu kvar kasavnu v'sif katan beiz de maharam svirle dafilu hifsidu hapol in pater umishum Davar HaAvod lo mechayiv. The only time there could be liability for Davar HaAvod is once there's some sort of kinyan, once there's some sort of haskalas hamalacha. Before that, there can't be liability mitam Davar HaAvod. So I think that works very nicely with the idea that the real mechayiv here is mitam schiros, mitam kinyan, and not mitam arev or not mitam nezek. You can see Tosos Rabbi Kiva Eger on the Mishnayos makes the same point. He quotes the Tosos Yom Tov, who hold that Davar HaAvod applies even when it's not, even Kodem Aschalas HaMalacha, even Kodem Kinyan. Rabbi Kiva Eger disagrees. He says, according to his interpretation of Rashi, whatever, he says, he thinks the case of Socha Le'enu Matan is actually going to be a case of Shekvar Asu Miktsas, where the workers already started working. And that's the case that's going to give rise to liability under Davar HaAvod. So I think this machlokes, kodem aschalas hamalacha, or only after aschalas hamalacha, is a very nice nafgamina to the machlokes as to whether the liability is mitam nezek or mitam kinyan. Good. That's really what I wanted to cover from that discussion from last time. But I want to
clarify.
Yeah.
Demar.
Very quickly. At the end of the Ktsos, there's this, I think, instructive discussion. You've underlined, looks like the beginning of it, about the beginning between Davar HaAvod and Nezek, which I take as a... the Ktsos view is that, like, in a case of the Baal HaBayis's withdrawal, I think that the reason why there would still have to be compensation is because of Minyas.
Revach, yeah.
Nezek.
That's right. Meaning a lot of what motivates the Schirus view is that you can't get to the Davar HaAvod result through a theory of Nezek because of Grumma problems.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that a little separately, because we'll see that some Achronim want to distinguish, and that's what this Ksos is about, and we'll see a Machan Ephraim later also, where they think maybe there's a distinction between a Chazara Baal HaBayis in the Davar HaAvod and the Poel in Davar HaAvod. Under a theory of Nezek, there's grounds to distinguish. So we'll actually talk more about that in a separate discussion. But yeah, good, very good point.
The Poel withdrawal is more along Nezek. Probably more room to say that the Poel actually hurts the Baal HaBayis.
It's interesting. We'll see. We'll see, actually. We'll see. That's part of this Ksos and Machan Ephraim discussion. But you're right to say that one of the things that motivates the contract view is that the Nezek view seems to under... to rely too heavily on a robust conception of Garmi. So,
yeah,
very good. Somebody else had a comment?
Yeah, it seems from Ksos that he doesn't explicitly say that it's an Arif theory, but he disqualifies both a Nezek and contract theory.
Why do you think he disqualifies a contract theory?
Sorry, I lost the Ksos.
See, I think the Ksos is probably working with the contract theory.
You think so?
Yeah, that's my sense.
What? Where'd you get that from?
I got the same sense also.
Yeah. Contract. I'll have to pull up. I think Haschila Samalach as the trigger is one reason, but let me look back to see if I could pull up a better formulation that would bolster my thinking. So no, I'll get back to you on that one, okay?
Okay.
Good. What I want to discuss now, actually, is this Arev view, which I think is conceptually in between the Nezikin theory and the contract theory. And it's very important because it's its own halachic basis for liability. Actually, we have some din Torahs we'll talk about in a separate discussion, where like if you can't be mechayiv somebody mitam nezek, because of like grama and garmi problems, so actually a good thing to have in your back pocket is to be mechayiv mitam arev, that they induced somebody to spend money by making certain representations, and that's a sufficient basis for halachic chiyuv. And I think you see Rishonim here who think that the Davar HaAved liability is grounded in this theory of mitam arev. So before we get into the idea of arev explicitly, I just want to just make one har on the Marik, where the Marik is implicitly pointing to this theory of Arev. So turn back for a second to page 45 in the Makor Roshi, to that Chua of the Marik in Simen Kaf Lamed Gimel. So you saw the Marik had this, remember he said that it's Sechir Mitam Sechiros, but then in the last underlying section on 45, he entertains what I think is the alternative Hotzi Mamon Al Piv Arev theory. He says, "V'af al gav shehotzi ma'osav al smach divrei Reuven." Right, even though Shimon spent money relying on Reuven's promise, right? So I think here he's shifting gears and saying, "Oh, maybe there's a separate ground for liability, even though this guy is working for free and wouldn't qualify for liability under Schiras Poalim contract. There could be liability under Arev. What is Arev? It's the idea that he induced me to spend money." And we'll see later that, and the Rishonim will say that means implicitly he's willing to indemnify me against the loss that I incurred by relying on him. The Marik he casts that aside because it's Shimon hu de ifsed anafshe the havli lasukia daita dil mahadar beruven. It's true that in halacha there would be basis mitam arev, but not in this case because Shimon didn't reasonably rely on Reuven's promise, and it sounds like. Probably in this case, that's because Reuven was working for free. And when someone's working for free, you know that you can't rely on them to be as dependable. So I just wanted to point out that the Marik himself seems to be entertaining Chiyuv Mitam Arev, but then just rejects the application in that case because of this contingent consideration that it wasn't a justified reliance. Okay.
Doesn't he seem to be rejecting Arev in general, though? And then isn't this true in every single case of Arev? That
no.
Shimon opted an Afshe, that Suki Date, like every case of Arev, you can say the exact same thing. When, like the standard case the Ritva brings up, when I like, you know,
it's interesting.
Tell someone like, oh, put money here on this rock, and so I'm going to hide myself to pay you back.
Meaning you're
taking your money out, like you could say, also, maybe I'll change my mind. Maybe I'm not going to pay you back.
Interesting. So you're suggesting that maybe every case of Tzchiras Polim, according to the Ma'arik, is a non-justified reliance. Havle lasuke adaite, that workers back out every now and then.
Yeah, he's rejecting Arya. It's
interesting.
He raised Arya as a possibility, and then he says, no, Arya is not right. a legitimate avenue.
Yeah, that's an interesting reading of the Ma'arik. I understood it more to be limited to the fact that the worker was working for free in this case, and that's what makes it a non-justified reliance. But I hear what you're suggesting. If you look at the Pisrei Choshen, maybe this is what influenced me, on the bottom of 46. So you'll see he says, in the last paragraph in 46, he says, "V'im mishum he's citing the Ma'arik, "V'im mishum shehotzi ma'otzav al pidiburo, lo matzinu chiyuv bezeh ela kisheyesh smichas das, hu kisheoseh bechinam ein smichas das. Tahavle lasuge adayte sheyachzer bo." So you see on the Pisrei Choshen, I think those paragraphs are what I added in. The parentheses are what I added in, I think.
Let me pull it open.
It's just in there. But I can't believe I put that in this. I usually don't try to put things into the text that aren't there. Where's my Pisrei Choshen?
This is why Ben is taking Dr. Bergman's class, so that he can figure out all the layers in the text.
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't know. Would I have done that? Would I have put the parentheses right in there like that? It's not the way I usually operate. Here he says...
Yeah, if it's MS, it's MS. If it's Sheker, it's Sheker. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Well, the question is, did the Pisrei Choshen himself get ensnared in Sheker, you know?
Are you going to get
it
scenario
to him? It doesn't really matter what the
Pisrei Choshen is. Oh, no, it's there. It's in the Pisrei Choshen. It's his formulation, not mine. It's there. Here, I don't know if you guys could see, but here's the... It's in here. Right
there's
here.
I think halakhic scholarship among religious Jews is the only field in the whole world where you really hope that somebody else said brilliant things.
Right. All right, so I think Yoni, you see how the Pisrei Choshen is reading it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but I see.
I think we talked about this, I think, already on Tuesday, I'm not sure that the Pisrei Choshen is right in his evaluation of Arya.
Right. I think you're right about that. The reading could go both ways. But I think I was either influenced by the Pisrei Choshen's reading, or I think that's a good reading of the Ma'arik. Okay, so let's try to flesh out a little bit what this idea of Mitam Arev is. So turn here to page 50 for a second in the Makor sheet. We have the Ritva and Bometzia Ayin Heyman Beis. He, I guess, is the most vocal and the most articulate advocate of Chiyuv Mitam Arev applying to Chazara de Poalim. And you see he discusses our Mishnah of, you're hired to bring the instruments for the mace and the kala. And just see the underlined section on page 50 says, Vahatam b'tashlum in elu, humi masha amarnu lamala, actually in the earlier parak. And look at this formulation. D'chol shehivtiach l'chaveiro, anytime you promise to your friend, v'sama chaveiro alav, and he relied on you, v'ilmale haftachasa lo hayabalo shim hefzid, and the reliance caused him a loss, chayiv l'shalim lo impasha v'davar. You are liable if somehow you were negligent, you breached your duty, etc. That's the basis for liability. Okay? Now, notice in the next paragraph, he says, "Im tomar im kein lama eino socher alei mele kedei kefel schar im bilvado kedei chavila." Why is there a cap on the liability that these workers who breach in Dabra Aved are chayiv? Right? They should be, I guess, liable for all losses. Says Yeshlomar Dimistama Hainu Dastiku Adatayu Sheim Lo Yuchlu Laso Sheim Tzal Olam Polim Bekeif Oscharon Bialze Bilvad Hiftichuhu. He's saying, oh, it's just an umdina. It's a contingent fact that these people probably thought that if we back out, he'll be able to find workers for at least double our salary. So they didn't have intent to be mischayiv themselves for more than that. Unless they actually deposited their working tools at the Balabais' house, in which case we could assume that they had intent to make themselves liable up to that amount of the tools that they deposited. So what I think what you see is going on here in the Ritva, he thinks there's a separate ground mitam arev. It sounds definitely arev applies when you make a promise, you induce somebody to rely on it to their detriment, and they suffer a loss. It sounds also like the basis is some implicit hischaivos. It's like a voluntary indemnification to cover the losses of somebody who relies on your word. So I think nezek is about your liability for, you know, breaking somebody's window. You damage someone's property, you're automatically liable. Nothing to do with your voluntary willingness to become liable. It's the action itself, the cause of the loss, that generates liability. Contract is different. Contract is you create a duty to perform a certain job, and then you have a duty to complete the job, and if you don't, then you're going to be chayav for the costs of completion. Arev is in between. Arev is that you are voluntarily being mischayav yourself, given the fact that somebody relied on your word, to indemnify them for losses that they suffer from the reliance. Does everybody see conceptually how these three ideas are distinct? Guys?
It strikes me as a stretch, Itamar.
Which is a stretch?
Arev. The way you put Arev, here are two readings of Arev. Tell me which one you think is closer to, tell me which, if you think they're both kind of possible.
Yeah. Well, we're about to look at sources on Arev in closer detail, but let's hear.
Okay, can I throw out a concept?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, okay. One is that Arev is what you just said, indemnification against law. As in the classic case of Arev, which is like the guarantor on a loan. There it's pretty clear that what you're committing yourself to is covering this guy, is covering your friend's non-payment, is covering your friend's people. Okay? That's one view. The other view is a promise not to make someone's losses whole, but rather to do something. And if you don't do something, the guy will suffer a loss. And therefore, you you have to cover the loss because you promised to make the guy whole. So one of those is a promise to perform, the failure to execute on which triggers the liability. The other is a promise to cover a loss if a loss occurs. I think there's a difference.
Yeah, well, there's a difference, right? I mean, I think the Arev idea is a promise to indemnify somebody from loss. That's the idea.
That doesn't sound like employment.
Doesn't sound important?
No. It doesn't sound like employment.
Oh, right, it's not. Correct. It's not employment at all. It's a sui generis basis of liability distinct from contract. Right? The idea is...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you could clarify.
What I'm saying is, like, it's unclear why... It's unclear why that sort of liability should be applicable to this...
case.
Kind of.
Okay, so we'll see the Rishonim's formulations in a second, but do you see how conceptually this idea of voluntary indemnification is distinct from both the Nezek paradigm and the contract paradigm?
Yeah, I think.
Whether it's a persuasive whether it's persuasively applied to our case is something we'll discuss in a second.
The thing that I said that wasn't indemnification, that's just a contract. Okay,
correct.
Yeah.
Right, meaning obligating myself to perform and then having certain responsibilities in performing and duties in breaching that primary duty, that's really distinct from just saying, look, hey, dude, rely on me, and if you lose because of relying on me, I'll cover your costs.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Does that, how does it, to me, it's a couple of different words for the same thing.
Ben, what's that?
To me, that just sounds like different words for the same thing.
Really? What's, let me think of a good idea.
Ben is the cynical view that contracts are just, are not promises to perform. They're just two options, one of which is compensation for loss.
Yeah, I guess that is what you're, is that what you're thinking, Ben?
Maybe Ben's just a question again.
I guess that's like, I guess that's sort of what I'm thinking.
But,
yeah,
You don't have to look at it that way, right?
I'm thinking about it because I was never formulated like that, but that sounds like, well.
Right, so I would say think of the contract as you are committed to certain duties, responsibilities, the breach of which give rise to certain liabilities, right? To basically make the contract as whole as possible. That's very different from the idea of saying, look, trust me, rely on me, and whatever you lose by relying on me is my responsibility. You don't see those are different? Let me give you an example. Suppose, Ben, I say, Ben.
Yeah, sorry.
Look, don't worry. You don't have the coronavirus. You're not going to get it if you go to Columbia today. Go to Columbia, and if you get the virus, I'll cover your costs of healthcare for the next, 2 months. Right?
Okay.
There's no contract there. It's not like I have a duty to perform for you. It's not like I was contracted to provide a service. It's just a voluntary indemnification. Right? I was just kind of saying, like, Ben, you're worried about it, but rely on me and I'll make sure that you don't suffer a loss by doing what I tell you to do.
I guess, yeah, I mean that just seems to me that's like a verbal contract.
So it's a hischaiva. So it's a contract via the indemnification, right? That is going to be a schaivas midas. I'm agreeing to cover your costs. That is a contract, but it's like a voluntary liability. That's different from having a duty to perform a certain task, like play at a wedding or something, or harvest someone's field, the breach of which gives rise to, duties to make the employer as whole as possible.
Okay.
I think Cole is right. Cole is saying something very interesting. He's saying maybe your view of contract is not that the breach gives rise to the duties. Like, so it's not like there's some close connection between the primary duties and the secondary duties and breach. It's rather that I have one duty to perform and separately I'm agreeing to indemnify you.
Correct. That is that, yeah. That's how I would.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think we should keep these two ideas separate. All right?
Okay.
Okay, yeah, good. It's a good point. It's good to clarify that. So I'm working with the assumption that these are really just separate grounds of liability. Just give me 1 second, guys. All right. Good. So those are the three grounds of liability. What I want to do now is I want to take a closer look at the idea of Arev and try to get better traction on that. Okay, so let's turn now to the source sheet on Chiyuv Mitam Arev. Does everybody have that open?